Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, a podcast about Star Trek by two guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Adam Pranica.
And I'm Ben Harrison.
Ben, whenever possible, I'm trying to use NPR-style introductions, so I'll introduce myself and then I'll leave a big pause before the I'm and my name. Have you noticed that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's because I'm trying to get us picked up and syndicated on NPR.
I think this show is right in the public radio wheelhouse. I don't know why we haven't been picked up already.
Is R your middle name? Because if we're going to go to NPR, you're going to need a strong middle name.
It is my middle nom de plume.
Yeah. So. I would be Adam Lewis Pranica.
Wow.
If we were on NPR.
Nice. I got a strange Twitter hater recently who, like, it was like an egg account, and they said, like, why don't you go by your given middle name and show some respect to your family?
What?
And I can only assume it was some member of my distant family that I'm not in touch with.
But wow.
It was such a strange interaction. It's the first time I've had to block an egg.
No way. So, I mean, you blocked a family member.
I guess. I have no idea if that's actually what was going on or if it was some strange spam gambit or what, but...
Was it one message and you're blocked, or did you have a conversation with this person?
No, I blocked him right away.
Wow.
Made me feel too yucky to even contemplate what it might be, so...
Yeah, that's gross.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Keep your bad feelings to yourselves, people.
Yeah, unless you're pissing all over our iTunes reviews, keep it to yourself.
This is becoming a speech.
You're the captain, sir. You're entitled.
Not entitled to ramble on about something everyone knows.
You want to start the show? We got Coming of Age.
We start this episode with Wesley bumping into a sullen buddy in the hallway of the Enterprise his name is Kurland. Jake Kurland?
Yeah, I think everyone just calls him Jake.
Yeah, he's upset because, unlike Wesley, he did not get into the Starfleet entrance exam round robin. So this is a pretty Wesley-centric episode, and basically the conflict that Wesley will be experiencing is that Starfleet Academy allows four people to compete for one spot every year. It's a really confusing situation because it makes it seem like Starfleet Academy has an entering class of one, and Wesley is competing for that one spot with four brilliant aliens from all over the United Federation of Planets.
Clearly, hair isn't one of the metrics that the Academy looks at, because right off the bat, Jake has got amazing hair. Like, he's totally Patrick Swayze-ing out.
Yeah.
And
Wesley's got more of like a Pee-wee haircut in this episode.
We can't know for sure, but I imagine Will Wheaton saw that he was going to be in the A story and went out to get a haircut before the shoot. And I don't know. He looks like fresh out of the seat at Supercuts. It's a little unfortunate.
It's more Pee-wee-ish than he's ever been. And
yeah, it's super Pee-wee.
Soup's Pee.
This show always turns into Star Trek Haircast.
Yeah, we might as well just rebrand around this hair theme that we've been pursuing.
if anyone would like to buy ad space on the show, I think we definitely recommend stylists of all kinds.
Yeah, great clips for hair, supercuts.
Yeah.
Anyways, no sooner has Wesley beamed down to this planet that he's going to be testing on than Admiral Quinn and his attaché, Commander Remick, have beamed up. And Quinn is thrown his weight around early and often, telling Picard that for reasons that he cannot explain, Remick is going to be going over the Enterprise bolt by bolt, leaving no stone unturned, trying to find out what is wrong on the Enterprise. And that's like all of the explanation that he's willing to offer.
Yeah, it's a tension that permeates the entire episode, because in Picard's captain's log, he's like, yeah, me and Quinn are buds from back in the day. I'm actually really excited to have him on board. And as soon as he beams up, Quinn just big dogs the shit out of him.
Yeah. This is the second time we've seen an admiral pop onto the transporter pad and treat Picard like a real sniveling bitch.
It's going to be a trend, really.
Yeah. Which is crazy. He's a captain, yes, but he's also like the most prestigious captain in the Starfleet, right?
Sure. No one treats him that way.
Nope.
It's like he has a huge skeleton in his closet that everyone knows about.
Yeah. Well, this episode we also find out that Wesley is 15 going on 16. He's turning 16 in a month. And I don't know what the age of consent is in the Federation, but, you know, it's 16 in a lot of places on Earth.
Look, if the Federation's cool with arranged marriage, who knows what they're willing to accept as far as age of consent.
Right, but I sort of wonder if that's sort of when the bloom comes off the rose for Picard and he starts looking for a younger side piece.
I tell you what, you couldn't do better than Jake. Guy's a fine-looking kid.
Yeah.
I mean, he's basically walking around the ship with a varsity letterman's jacket on. Like,
yeah.
Like, he's got that look.
But do you think he has that victim psychology that Picard likes to exploit?
Well, I think we're about to find out, because Jake has a storyline here.
Yeah.
And some pretty clear daddy issues.
Before we get too far from our hair discussion, I also just wanted to bring up Riker's hair in this episode, which seems to be also different. I'm wondering if they brought in like the B team on hair and makeup for this ep, because Riker is as close to Donald Trump as any human I have ever seen with his haircut in this episode.
Yeah.
Like, Donald Trump has an incredibly strange hairdo. Like, whatever you think about the man or his politics, you'd have to admit that it's the most unique haircut you've ever seen. And Riker pretty much nails it, but in a nice auburn color in this episode.
A nice chestnut.
So things kind of kick off. You know, Wes gets started with his testing for Starfleet admissions, and he meets the pretty babe, the Vulcan, and the, what is it, Benzite, the alien Mordok that he's testing against.
Yeah, and I think this Benzite guy qualifies as the most alien we've seen in the first season.
Yeah.
He's blue, he's wet,
yeah,
and he's vaping at all times.
Yeah, he has like the thing that Billy Joel would have to keep his mouth harp in place.
Yeah, he's got sort of like fish gill mouth, and he sort of presses this vape pen up into his mouth to get a hit. I think it's a way of the show to sort of telegraph to us that he might have some compromised ethics. or in like in like D&D parlance, he might be a chaotic bro.
Is that one of the classifications in D&D, chaotic bro?
if you're using a vape pen to the degree that it's always on your person and basically in front of your face, like Neil Young playing a harmonica, then yeah, that's chaotic bro.
Yeah. I always prefer lawful bro, but I'll take a chaotic bro if I have to.
Sure.
So Wesley's up to that. Remnick starts, or I'm going to call him Remnick a million times. It's Remick.
I think it's Remick.
Starts just kind of dicking around all over the ship, you know, like leering over Data's shoulder while Data's trying to work at ops and taking notes very conspicuously. And Data's like, dude, what the fuck do you want?
Yeah, Data, who isn't bothered by anyone making fun of him at any point, is bothered by Remick.
And Riker gets a real bee in his bonnet about it.
Remick's going to turn this ship upside down.
Tries to complain to the captain, and the captain's like, you just have to deal with it. I'm pissed off about it too, man.
You can tell Riker is really upset because he goes to his leaning wall. He's like, this Remick guy's really pissing me off. And then he turns to the wall and just sort of like cozies up to it.
Yeah. Riker does a lot of great physicality in this episode. There's definitely a point where Remick like hauls him into the ready room and Riker does the classic leg swing over the chair move.
Yeah, the Riker maneuver.
Yeah. You know, because if he sat down normally, it would crush his prodigious sack.
I think this was the first time we've seen it, right?
Yeah, I think it might be the unveiling of the Riker maneuver. So anyways, as shit is popping off on the bridge, this kid Jake decides to go and do something rather rash, Adam.
Yeah, he steals a shuttlecraft. He gets all butthurt about not getting into the academy. And hops into a shuttlecraft, knows enough to fly it out of the shuttle bay, but then as soon as he's out into space, he totally freaks out and figures out that he can't control it at all, which I think is amazing because I would think the ability to fly it out of a cargo bay door would be an amount of skill greater than navigating open space, but evidently not.
Well, much like the 9/11 hijackers, he was interested in learning to take off, but not so much in learning to land.
Yeah, never forget. So Remick's on the bridge, and he gets to see that a shuttlecraft has been hijacked and is just crawling up Picard's ass about this. Like,
isn't that area secured?
Not now, Remick.
How is this possible, Captain? You've got kids stealing shuttlecrafts.
Pretty legitimate question, actually. Like,
yeah,
how
yeah,
is
he's
a,
not wrong.
A non-enlisted, non-crew member who lives on this ship able to just walk into the shuttle bay, get on a shuttle, and bounce?
Yeah, and I think it's a little more believable because we don't see it. Like, we're basically on the bridge when he gets the signal that a shuttle has been stolen. So this figure skater is in a shuttlecraft cruising around, and then he loses control almost immediately. And
does not stick that triple Lutz.
No. He almost sow-cows it into the planet's atmosphere. But not before Picard just sort of talks him down. He's Picard soothingly hails him and says, look, buddy, you got to aim at the planet. Aim it right for the planet and then build up some speed and then pull up. That's all you need to do. And no one on the bridge seems to believe this is a viable plan.
Data has already announced that this kid is dead meat.
Yeah. And I think the hailing frequency is still on, so Jake can probably hear every other bridge crew person go, oh yeah, this guy's fucked. Meanwhile, the one guy you respect the most is telling you basically to commit suicide, according to your understanding of the situation.
Yeah.
He steers toward the planet and bounces off of the atmosphere. I think it's interesting that as they're coming up with plans to save him, like they go down the checklist, like we can't beam him back. We can't get him with a tractor beam.
Right.
Like because he's out of range.
Right. And it's been like 15 seconds since he took off.
But at no point do they decide to move the ship.
Right. Yeah.
Like moving the ship is not an option. Like we can't move closer to the shuttlecraft. That shuttlecraft is, I guess, too fast. I don't know. I thought that was weird.
It was a very convenient no solution problem, you know?
Yeah. So he regains control and evidently flies back into the shuttle bay.
Yeah, so he did know how to land, huh?
Yeah.
It is a guiding principle of a Starfleet base. If you can't find it within yourself to stand up, tell the truth, you don't deserve to wear that uniform.
So that little crisis was averted, and this is like a moment you see Remick's shovel-faced facade sort of crack a little bit.
Yeah, he does a full-on fist pump.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
So, despite seeing the competence of the bridge crew here, Remick continues poking around, and there's a great scene like where it's like kind of shot reverse shot of Remick interviewing Data, and then Worf, and then the Doctor, and then the Captain, where it's like he asks a question, the answer, he asks another question, it cuts back, it's like the next crew member, and you know, it's all just kind of building up to this confrontation with Picard, where Picard is just fucking at the end of his rope, and he's like,
"The only thing I'm guilty of is allowing this charade to go on so long."
Pretty fucking great pronunciation of charade.
I think that's the first of maybe 18 different pronunciations of that word throughout the series.
I feel like I got my $5 worth already, though.
Yeah.
So Picard storms into Admiral Quinn's quarters and says that this Remick shit has gone on for long enough, and he's pretty sick of it. Remick wanders into the room and informs Quinn that he basically hasn't found a speck of dust on the bridge crew, other than they're all real good pals. So he can find no fault with how Picard has operated the Enterprise, despite the fact that he does identify a time when Picard violated the Prime Directive. Only one, which I felt like it was a short count.
We're 18 episodes in, and I think this is the first episode that actually refers to other episodes.
Yeah. And it's an episode that is setting the table for a future episode as right. well, which I feel like is, I don't know, it feels like it doesn't quite have its own self-contained plot, but it definitely held my interest because of those things. Like, it felt a little bit more modern as an episode because it felt very connective.
Yeah, yeah. One area of improvement, though, was that scene between Picard and Quinn where Picard walks into Quinn's quarters. There is maybe the biggest mark I've ever seen on the carpet.
Really?
Yeah. Like, they do the establishing shot a little wider than I think they intended. And yeah. You can see Picard approach Quinn's desk, and then Quinn walks around the desk and is totally pinging the mark on the floor as he does his turnaround. Like, it's pretty great.
Yeah, you know, there's another scene in this episode in the holodeck where Wesley is like leaning against a wall, and you get close enough to the wall to see that yellow grid is just tape on like really low grade particle board. Like, you see the texture in the plywood that they've used to construct the holodeck set, and it really broke the illusion for me.
Like, they probably told Will Wheaton, look, you can't put your full weight against the wall like yeah. Riker does against his leaning wall. You gotta really.
We have not reinforced it quite as much as that room on the bridge. Worf wanders in, and this is actually like a pretty, I think it's the first scene where we've really had a deep character moment for Worf.
Yeah, the first time he's had more than two lines.
Yeah,
continuously.
And Wesley asks him about this psych test that's coming up, and the psych test basically is notorious because it tests a cadet against the thing that they fear the most, and Wesley's really worried about it, and asks Worf, a warrior, how they could test him, and Worf has a great line.
I thought there was nothing that could frighten a Klingon warrior.
Only fools have no fear.
I felt like it was a good moment.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I think one of the greatest fears Wesley's probably already overcome, which is like, what do you do when you get a really terrible haircut? You just got to wear that shit until it grows out.
Yeah.
You can't let it stop you.
You got to fake it until it grows out.
Are you looking for the perfect gift to celebrate the moms in your life? Aura Frames are beautiful Wi-Fi connected digital picture frames that allow you to share and display unlimited photos. Every mom I have ever given an Aura Frame to has absolutely loved it. And that includes a lot of moms I know. This is a gift that I have personally given many, many times, and it's great. I can upload photos from my phone the moment I take them, and That means that mom or grandma out there is going to get pictures of their loved ones delivered to their living room. And right now, Aura is having a great sale for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting auraframes.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's auraframes.com and use the code SCARVES at checkout to show your support for our show. Terms and conditions apply. Mother's Day is coming up, and one of the best gifts you can give a mom that you might share a bed with is doing some yard work. Some yard work downstairs, if you know what I mean. With Manscaped. This season, make sure you groom your carpets and your drapes with the leaders in below-the-waist grooming. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants to let the mother of your children know how much you appreciate her continuing to put up with you.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
My love is a fever.
Back to the meeting with Quinn and Captain Picard and Remick. Quinn sort of confides in Picard that he really needed to reassure himself of his trust in Picard and the crew because something has infiltrated Starfleet. Some insidious force is at work in the command structure of Starfleet, and what he's decided is to bring all of the trustworthy officers he can around him. So he's offering Picard an increase in rank to Admiral and the job of being the Commandant of Starfleet Academy. And Picard is pretty taken aback by this offer. He's definitely going to give it some serious consideration.
Because it's like the Catholic Church moving one of their priests to a different parish, to basically the ultimate parish.
Yeah, come back to the Vatican.
Just a limitless supply of 16-year-olds for Picard. God, could you imagine?
Yeah.
Shaping young minds, indeed. So Picard's got to think on this a while. He doesn't give him an answer right away. He's like, huh. All right, well, give me the evening.
Yeah.
I'm gonna consider your kind offer.
I'm going to mull it over.
So meanwhile, we're back with Wesley on the surface as he's taking these tests. And these tests are like, put these dots into this big cube of places for the dots to go.
Yeah, and, it's like a really bad iPhone game.
Yeah. It's. I mean, we're made to believe that there are some mental gymnastics happening here. But all these tests are pretty inscrutable to us, save the psychological test.
Right.
So they finish all basically the written and the math portion of the test, and all that's left is the psychological exam. We're told by the professor that everyone is extremely close in terms of score, so I think we all understand the stakes going in to the psych exam. And if Wesley nails this, I think... We think his chances are pretty good at getting in. So Wesley is led to the room where the psych exam will take place, and Mordok walks out.
Are you all right? I will be.
He looks like someone stole his vape pen. He is real sad. His hands look bruised for some reason. And Wes is like, hey, bud.
Yeah, I didn't notice that his pinky on this alien, the pinky is the biggest finger on the hand.
Oh, I didn't get that. No.
It's always weird when they do something to the hands because it's not something you notice until they're like the only thing in frame.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, it's definitely a whiff of death.
Yeah, so this only serves to make Wes even more nervous about what's going to happen. So he's led into the room where Mordok just was, and...
It's the cheapest looking room that ever was or ever will be a set in Star Trek. It's like literally just a bunch of plywood with a single coat of paint on it, not really plausibly connected to the floor in any way.
One you see the seams and
all the flats. Yeah, it is so cheap looking.
Yeah, and it sort of serves to elevate the tension. I mean, once you get past the comedy of what it looks like, it's right. Just a chair in a room and Wesley's fears. So we're in there a little bit, and Wes is like, all right, I'm ready to go. He sits there for like a couple of beats, and then he hears an explosion outside the door. And he's like, well, I guess they're not going to do the test. So he rolls out of the room. And walks down the hall, hears another explosion and some screams. And he opens up the door and he sees shit has gone down in this room. There's a big pipe that's broken and a bunch of steam is coming out and two people are crushed inside. And yeah. They're screaming at him.
Well, one of them is crushed and the other is just cowering behind an I-beam.
Right, there's an older guy who's been sprayed with a fire extinguisher, and he's got a big heavy pipe on him.
And then, like, fat Seth MacFarlane is over in the corner just whimpering and, you know, totally beside himself, unable to affect any positive improvement in the situation.
Yeah. So Wes is, like, using his 15-year-old strength to... You know, like, you hear stories of people in crazy situations, like little girls lifting cars off of their dads when they're changing a tire and the jack breaks. Like,
right.
You know, he's filled with super strength as he picks up this pipe and drags the pipe guy out of the room. All the while, the scared guy is just screaming at Wes, like,
we're going to die in here!
He's the Hudson from Aliens of the situation.
Game so over, Wes, man.
Yeah. Wes drags the guy out, the door closes, and his professor is outside to greet him. And Wes is freaked out. He says,
Officer Chang, this
Wesley. It's all right.
It's funny, the guy whose legs are theoretically crushed stands up and like brushes some but not very much of the flocking off of his jacket and is like, thanks a lot. Later.
Yeah, great job by that guy.
Yeah.
I like acting within acting, you know?
Yeah,
that's
totally.
Pretty complex.
He had good business.
Yeah.
Damok Angelad at Tanagra. Damok Angelad at Tanagra.
The results are in, and of all of the cadets, Mordok, the Benzite, had the edge in terms of overall score and is granted admission to Starfleet Academy. So Wesley is pretty bummed out, but he's encouraged to give it a shot next year when they open up admissions for one more person into the Academy.
Yeah, they must not need to staff many starships at this point.
Yeah. So back on the Enterprise, Picard is wandering down the hall in his dress uniform, which I feel like they changed this later in the series, but the dress uniform in these early episodes is literally like leggings and a very long dress-like top, which looks real strange on Picard.
It's sort of like when you see someone wearing a utilikilt out in the wild.
Yeah.
It just doesn't look right.
Yeah, it's like, huh. I mean, I see what you were going for there, but doesn't hang together.
Yeah, really doesn't.
He bumps into Jake in the hallway and gives him some kind of words of wisdom that for all of Jake's freaking out, he kept his wits about him when that shuttle was about to crash into the planet, and he should at least realize that he has some inner strength from that moment. And then
that was so weird. Like, I really saw your potential when you hijacked a piece of gear from the flagship of the Federation and almost killed yourself. Like, get back on the horse, bud.
I thought it was cool, though. I mean, like, he says to Remick, though, like, you know, young men make stupid decisions all the time. Like, we can't obviously let him just off scot-free, but we also can't, like, hold that against him for the rest of his life or whatever. So I thought that was cool. Like, he lets Riker, you know, do some discipline on him. You know, who knows what that means, but...
Cleaning his holodeck after he's done.
Yeah, so maybe they're playing, like, good cop, bad cop.
I feel like this is the first episode where you really get that benevolent Picard that we come to know basically for the rest of the series. Like, the man who is respected unequivocally, the guy that the entire bridge crew would put it all on the line for. Like,
totally.
You get to hear, you know, during that interrogation scene earlier, you get to hear everyone talk about him. And,
right.
And it's sort of like character development through other characters.
Yeah. I think the penultimate scene is he bumps into Wesley in the observation lounge and they talk about the entrance exam and Wesley is really ashamed that he didn't get in. And Picard once again reassures a young member of his crew and even confides in Wesley that he didn't in fact pass the first time he attempted the Starfleet entrance exam.
That gives him a lot of hope. He's like, holy shit, are you serious? Yeah, Picard scolds him. He's like, don't ever tell anyone that. So yeah. So Wes has a bunch of Picard secrets to keep at this point.
Yeah, yeah. This may be the least worst.
Yeah. This was another episode where a girl clearly hits on Wes and Wes doesn't know what to do with it.
Yeah.
Like when he's doing the testing, there's a pretty cool chick down there who's clearly giving him some vibes.
I can't imagine what it would be like to have things come so easily. I have to push every step of the way.
Oh no, Oleana, it doesn't come that easily.
Wes basically tells Mordok how great it is that a girl is interested in him and yet does nothing.
Yeah, there's even a scene where she like is introducing herself to him and he's like, okay, I'm gonna go over here now, and then goes over and talks to Mordok.
I think he's more interested in being cool than having a girlfriend because he sees Mordok and he sees the vape pen. Like,
yeah.
I don't know, if you're a 15-year-old trying to find someone to model yourself after, it's probably chaotic bro at that point.
The only other scene that we haven't talked about at this point is when Picard tells Riker that he's been offered an admiralty and a spot at the academy, and Riker gets a huge grin on his face, and it's clear that Riker is excited about the prospect of being the captain of the Enterprise until Picard tells him, like, no, I'm not actually going to take the job. It's like the first time Riker has had this option that didn't involve Captain Picard beaming himself into space under an alien's influence.
Yeah, this constant teasing of Riker with the prospect of becoming captain, it happens pretty frequently in this first season.
Yeah. They spend a lot of time on it in the first season, which is a crazy thing to think about, given that there are 7 seasons of this show. Like, they really have to lay off after this because, like, it's going to start to look pathetic if he can't advance in the ranks.
Yeah, I mean, we also get, you alluded to it before, this idea of a conspiracy within the Federation. There's that part of it is unresolved. Like, Quinn and Remick beam off, but Quinn gives Picard in the transporter room a pretty strong warning about forces conspiring that they can't control. And so that's a fun little tease for what's going to happen later.
Totally.
Ben.
Yes, Adam.
As you were watching this episode, did you find a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible!
Drunk Shimoda!
I sure did. So drunk Shimoda is obviously our award for any member of the crew or cast having a great time or just doing something that seems like a drunk guy move. And I'll award mine this episode to Commander Remick just for one bonehead move he pulls, which is after all of this hassle that he's put the crew through, and to the extent that the captain of the ship has gone to Remick's boss and complained about it. And the boss has been like, yeah, you were kind of a dick, Remick. Remick is about to leave the room and he's like,
my tour in the Inspector General's office will be up in 6 months. When I'm finished, this is where I'd like to serve, sir.
And Picard just smolders as as he scowls at Remick. Like, Remick completely missed the mark with when the right moment to unload that little gem was.
Ben, I completely agree, and for the same reason, the same exact reason was the thing I wrote in my note. It felt like Remick is like using that seduction community strategy of negging someone. It feels like the entire episode is Remick negging, and then at the end he's like, oh yeah, by the way, I'd love to be here.
It's a surprise that the costume department didn't have him in a fedora with a giant feather in it.
Yeah, exactly. But they have a pretty strong rule about one bro per episode, and that was clearly Mordok. So we are in complete agreement. Drunk Shimoda is Remick, the quagmire-looking lieutenant commander.
I am the cutest of all. There are four lights.
What do we have coming up next time?
Next episode, the next unvetoable episode is number 19, Heart of Glory. Or I guess number 20 if you're using proper numbering technique. Lieutenant Worf is torn between his loyalty to the Enterprise and his fierce Klingon heritage when two Klingon fugitives take over the ship. Now, that's a description that does not jog my memory at all, other than a scene where I remember them like pulling little pieces of their uniforms apart and making a gun out of them. That is seared in my, 7 or 8 year old memory. But
if this is that episode, I also do remember that part. They pull like the little horn off of the boot, and they make a gun out of a belt buckle. It's a real MacGruber type of scene where they're like making something big out of a bunch of little parts.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
I feel like there were probably times when I was a child when I would attempt to secrete various weapon components around my person so that they wouldn't be detected based on this scene alone.
So like a rubber band and a paper clip. And,
exactly.
Like when you take apart those little click Bic pens, like with the spring and a little piece of plastic inside, you'd squirrel those away on your person?
Yeah, exactly. One of them's in my shoe. The rubber bands are on my wrist. Like, what? This is just my bracelet.
You were a bad man, Ben.
Yeah.
Bad man. The reception for this one was mixed, but mostly positive. Overly histrionic was the way they described one part of this episode. And a forgettable mess was another short review. I don't know.
Well, I've forgotten a lot of it, but I remember that one part, I think.
Most of the receptions I'm reading for episodes in the first season are mixed to negative. And if they're anything like Remick, they're eventually going to come around and start loving the show again in probably a really creepy way. All this negging in the reception.
They just want to bang Star Trek.
Why don't you love me back? You should love me. I'm looking forward to that one.
Yeah, me too. I tell you what, let's adjourn and come back next time with a new episode of Star Trek The Next Generation to talk about.
That's a great plan. That's a plan we've had from the start.
Oh, yeah.
If you ever want to reach out to either of us, we're both talking on the Twitters. I'm at Cut for Time.
I'm at Benjamin R, AHR.
And we share a great hashtag called Greatest Gen. There you can talk to the other 10 fans who listen to this show and interact with our aging World War II veteran community.
I've been seeing some World War I stuff on there as well.
Really?
Well, that's pretty exciting.
I'm sure they appreciate our company.
Yeah.
Old people are always looking for companionship, Ben.
And Star Trek stuff.
Yeah. We also have to thank Dark Materia for our opening and interstitial music. You can find the Picard song just about everywhere online. You can also send us an email. We're at drunkshimoda@gmail.com. We're starting to get some emails there, so thanks for those. All right, I've been Adam Pranik, and we'll see you next time where we take you through another exciting episode of Star Trek The Next Generation and do it in the least shameful way possible. See ya.
Bye.
Make it so. Make it so. Show.